Stay tuned for a special edition of the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast.
It hasn't been that easy, but I just do it. And I just want to encourage people that everybody that is in RE Mentor that have kids, just to work hard. Just the fact that you have family and kids, it doesn't mean that you don't have to create a business for yourself. But this has been really a ride for me.
You know, what you're describing is a challenge, and everybody has some sort of a challenge. Yours were your children. Some people are working 2 and 3 jobs. Some people just have past histories that were difficult. And the whole idea behind mindset is overcoming those challenges and just deciding that you're going to do it. And when you make that decision that you're going to do it, nothing's going to stop you. You become unstoppable.
Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Everybody, welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl.
On today's podcast, we are with Vanessa Alfaro. And Vanessa, we're going to talk about a 104-unit deal that she did in Texas called Southside Village. It was a $4.1 million deal. She raised $1.55 million in order to do the deal. And it has numerous value adds and unit upgrades, which are going to be very interesting to talk about as well. So you want to hear about that deal, how she got it done. You also want to stick around for a lightning round because you know how much fun that is. And before I bring Vanessa, introduce her onto the platform, I want to do a little bit of mindset stuff like I like to do each week. And in this particular case, this is a little bit of tough love, but I recently got involved with Clubhouse, Instagram, and TikTok. And I got on TikTok, and at first I didn't get on TikTok because I thought it was just a bunch of people doing crazy dances. And then I realized after I get on there and it got my algorithm down that they send me a lot of exercise TikToks, a lot of nutrition TikToks, and a lot of mindset TikToks. And I really, really like it. I actually watch it to wind down at the end of the day. So this one came on. And after this one came on, I actually sent it to my family members and some close friends. And like I said, this one's a tough love, but it goes like this. And this one, by the way, was by Sydney Bueller, B-U-H-E-L-L-E-R, if you wanted to follow her. It's very simple to get what you want. But it's not easy. It's your job to do the crap that you don't want to do so you can be everything that you're supposed to be and can be. And you're so damn busy waiting to feel like it. And you're never, ever going to feel like it, ever. And no one's coming. No one. No one's coming to push you. No one's coming to tell you to turn off the TV. No one's coming to tell you to get outdoors and exercise. No one's coming to tell you to put in that offer that you just analyzed. It's up to you, only you. Wake up with that every day. The other thing that I like to listen to when I'm waking up and feeling crappy in the morning, which I usually wake up and feel great because before I even open up my eyes, I first tell myself when I'm conscious, this is going to be a great day. Before any negative thoughts can come in, I tell myself, this is going to be a great day. This is going to be a great day. And then if for some reason I'm just not feeling it, like I don't want to get out of bed, then I go onto my phone and I pull up a video from YouTube called Dear Hard Work. And if you've never watched that video, I suggest that you pull it up on YouTube and watch it. Dear Hard Work is very motivational. I love it. So there you go. There's your bit of mindset for today. All right. If you go to davetoday.com, I have got a free book offer for you. And it is my iconic Multifamily Millions book. I wrote this as a sequel to Emerging Real Estate Markets. But this has been the start of many, many of our students' Multifamily Millions. So many people were inspired by this particular book and continue to be inspired by because it's foundational information that gives you the awareness, the foresight to know that you can become a multimillionaire and the step-by-step on how to go do it. Now, this book retails on Amazon for $23. You can have it for free. All I ask is you pay shipping and handling of $7.95. And you can also get some free bonuses when you do and also autograph it for you. Those bonuses are, number one, the 27 ways to buy multifamily properties with no money down. There's actually 104 ways in here. You hand it to your management company. They go out and do what it says. And then in doing that, you keep your property leased up and you keep that cash flow coming in. Another bonus I have is the Deal Flow Playbook. This is a playbook of checklists for all the different things that you're going to be doing in your multifamily deals, step by step. I learned a long time ago that if you do not follow a checklist and check things off, you miss things. And those are the things that are going to cost you money. So everything that you do in sourcing deals, underwriting deals, raising funds for your deals, taking over the properties on your deals, to the nitty gritty, the lease audit on your deals, to preparing for the exit of your deals, everything has a checklist. You get all those checklists as a bonus, and that's free. And then I mentioned I wrote the book Emerging Real Estate Markets. I also have a poster for you, and that is the Emerging Real Estate Markets poster. It gives you the four stages of the emerging markets. It gives you each particular phase, the key characteristics of those phases, and down below, it tells you what your key strategies should be for that particular phase. So you can just simply put this on your wall. And with that, you can determine what your market is, where it is in any particular phase, or if you're looking for emerging markets, which markets around the United States are actually emerging. And then from there, you can make the most amount of money in the least amount of time with the least amount of risk. And as you know, investing in multifamily properties and becoming wealthy, that wealth is created through appreciation. So that's why we are giving you the emerging market cycles as well. So multifamily millions, all the bonuses, just pay shipping and handling, and you get it now. So Vanessa, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
How are you, Dave?
Good.
So happy to be here and talking to you and everybody. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me. Okay, I was born and raised.
Yeah, you've got quite a background.
You like it?
Yeah, I was reading your bio. It's excellent. It's inspirational.
Do you like the entrepreneur?
I can't see that. What does it say? I see the word entrepreneur, but that's all I can see.
It says entrepreneur, someone who jumps off a cliff and builds a plane on the way down.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually what they told us at Harvard Business School as well. That's the definition of an entrepreneur.
It's really cool. I like it. And I have the picture of my kids here. Well, four of the five.
Before you do your bio, I just wanted to mention something. We share something in common. We both have a set of twins. You've got five kids. I had my twins first. You had your twins last. And they're young, right? How old are your twins?
They just turned 6 months yesterday.
Oh boy. I remember those. Mine are 4 and a half. I remember those days.
Yeah, they are just so much fun. And I have, let me tell you, I'm going to leave that for the end. I was born and raised in Latin America, actually in Venezuela, which is South America. And I've been a business owner and entrepreneur for all my life. I opened my first company when I was 22. And by the time I was 25, that company came from one employee, which was me, to more than 3,000 people and 17 locations in South America, and then moved to Central America. With my daughter, we opened the company there in Panama. So it was about 15 years, a lot of fun, okay? I really like it. And then I moved here to the US when I married my husband, that is from Chicago. And we opened another company about production and publishing that is just related about cars. So my husband is a car fan. So everybody in this house is a car fan. We talk about cars all the time. My son, which is now 7, his first words was Lamborghini and Ferrari and Porsche. This is how much we talk about cars here. Wow. And then I like to talk about this a little bit because I think it's inspirational for other people. But I was in a point in my life that, I mean, I had a lot of success. Okay, I've been an entrepreneur for all my life. I work with a lot of people, but I didn't want to do that anymore. I want to do something different. I want to spend more time with my family. I just want to do something different. And I didn't know what to do. Okay, I had single family homes in Central America. And my husband was always saying, we should go into multifamily. We should go into multifamily. I was like, listen, I've been doing business for all my life. This needs to be something that we have to study. It's not just like just buy multifamily and just do it like that. And I didn't know what to do. But then one friend told me, hey, I just got invited to this thing called RE Mentor. Let's go and see what is this about. And I went there and I was like, oh my God, this is what I really want to do. It was like, I didn't know that I wanted to do that. And then I was listening to one of the person that was at that event. I was like, I want to talk to this Dave. This really sounds like something that I want to do for the rest of my life. And that's how I started with...
How long ago was that?
4 years ago, maybe.
Four years ago. So the deal we're going to talk about today is not your first deal. What number do you think that was?
The second deal.
Okay. So before we get into this particular deal, talk about the fear that you had to overcome to get into your first deal.
I think that it was a little different for me because that person that I told you invited me to this RE mentor, she was my partner at that time. Okay. And we started this business together. And then she was really scared about doing this. I was like, we should go for 100 units. We should go for 100 units. And she was really, really, really scared. At that point, that 6 months later, she decided she was not going to do it anymore. Okay. Because
wow.
She didn't feel certain. So I was by myself and I still by myself working with different partners, but she's not in the business anymore. And I think it was different for me because I've been used to jump off the cliff and just feel the plane on the way down since I was 22. But I was very grateful to have Jeannie as a coach at that time, because the good thing about your people, Dave, is that they know how to coach people in different stage in their life. Mm-hmm. So for me, it wasn't about overcoming the fear, okay, of getting my first deal under contract. For me, it was maybe overcoming the fear of reaching people to raise money, okay?
Uh-huh.
So it was different. I was ready to go under contract for 100 units, okay? And Jeannie knows that, but it was different. So the good thing about the program is that they really know how to help you, okay, in whatever
yeah.
area you are.
Well, we've been coaching since 2000. And actually, we started in 2002, but we've been coaching since 2006. So we've got, I like to say to people that there's no type of a challenge that you have that we haven't coached somebody through, you know, in all this time. But I can tell you the difference in the mindsets, because you come from a background of doing business. And because you had a couple of successful businesses, you were already you had already gone through a lot of the different fears that people go through when they're first starting a multifamily business, because it's a business. It is the same as doing business. It is a business. Every particular property is its own business. And you had already been through that. So therefore you were ready to jump at a higher level. You probably scared her away from the cliff. And instead of jumping off the cliff, you scared her away from the cliff because your aspirations were so high, only because of what your background was. There's a lot of people that, you know, when we first started teaching, we were telling people to go for the 100 unit deal, go for the 100 unit deal. Until we realized that most people were afraid to do a 100 unit deal first. So now we changed it to start where you're comfortable. Is it 3 to 6 units? Is it 10 to 40 units? You know, start where you're comfortable and then grow from there, because you'll grow very, very quickly. But let's talk about this deal. What's it called? Southside?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a $4.1 million deal. This was built in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would like to, and I think that's going to help a lot of people that is in this call too. That deal came from a broker, okay, that was in St. Louis, okay, in Missouri. I was trying to get a deal in St. Louis, Missouri, and this guy was sending me deals. Like on about the third deal, was like, listen, this is not working, okay. I'm not going to buy this deal. This deal has mold over everywhere. All these buildings, this is just not going to work. It has aluminum wiring in one. It's just a disaster. And he said, okay, I'm going to send you a deal from a friend that they're just going to put it on the market. And he sent me this deal. And I was like, okay, I think this is going to work. But you really don't know where your deal is going to come from.
So the friend brought you a deal who had gotten it from a broker?
Yeah, this broker from St. Louis sent me this deal in Texas. Okay, because
wow.
Yeah, because he has his friend from Texas,
yeah.
And his friend sent him the deal before it was a little bit of a few days before it went on the market.
Terrific.
This deal was on Craigslist and LoopNet. It was open to everybody. So the other thing is that sometimes people feel that they cannot find deals in Craigslist and LoopNet. I said, listen, there are some deals that you can find. Okay, maybe it's harder. Okay, but this deal was not an off market. They actually did a call for offers, and we have to compete with some other people, et cetera, et cetera. I actually went to Charlton at the last UP. It was a UP19, I think, in Boston. Okay.
Yeah.
And I presented this deal, which it was a portfolio It was a portfolio of 208 units. And I finally ended with one of the two because the other one, the guys went $200,000 hard money day one. And I didn't feel comfortable doing that.
All right. So let me back up for a second. So this broker from St. Louis that got you this deal, and by the way, if anybody's from around the St. Louis area, I always like to plug my friend's place, Clementine's. It's the only ice cream place in the country where they mix alcohol with ice cream, but you can also get ice cream plain. But the flavors are unbelievable. So that being said,
is that St. Louis?
Yeah. Have you been to Clementine's?
No, but I'm going to go because I have a deal on the contract there in St. Louis.
Oh, go to Clementine's. Talk to the owner, Tanya. Tell her that Dave said hi.
Okay.
Dave from Boston.
So it's alcohol with ice cream?
Yeah, they mix alcohol with ice cream. I actually don't like alcohol with ice cream, so I get the non-alcoholic ice cream. But it's there's this flavor called crack. Oh, my God, so good. That's why they call it crack. You got to keep eating it and eating it. So this broker, you formed this relationship with this broker. How did that happen? Because, you know, the most important thing is that you form good relationships with brokers, so they send you off to different deals that potentially make sense. So how did that happen? How did you form that relationship with the broker?
I found it on Craigslist, at least in one of looking for properties in St. Louis. And I talked to him many times. One of the interesting things that I was going to mention about this deal is that I actually found this deal and closed this deal with my daughter. My third daughter was 5 months old. So I was negotiating this deal by the time I practically had a newborn, okay, with me. And so it was a little bit challenging, but it was a lot of talking. I found this guy and many other people in St. Louis, and they didn't have any good deals. So this guy sent me three deals, okay, and the last one was very big. And then I said, this really doesn't work for this, and this, okay? But I need to close 100 units, okay, by the end of the year.
That was your goal?
That's what I said. I always have a goal on my mind about how many units I want to close. And Jeannie is always reminding me. She's always telling me, Vanessa, you know, you have to spend time with your husband too. And because sometimes I just go over and above. But I said, I need to close 100 units by the end of this year.
So you went into the deal with him, in the St. Louis deal. That didn't work out. He refers you to, was it his friend or was it another part of his brokerage company?
He was his friend. His friend.
Oh. He was not even. And was he a broker? Was he a broker as well?
Broker.
Oh, he was? All right. Mm-hmm. So you get that deal. You analyze it on Kretzky. The numbers worked? Or, you're going to best, highest and best. Okay. And what number were you? What number are you on the highest and best? Were you the top?
On the best and finals, I don't think I was at the top, but at that time, I was already spent like 30 days talking to this guy about the deal.
And the guy being the broker?
The broker. Not the same one from St. Louis, okay?
Right.
The one from St. Louis was already, okay, not in the deal, okay?
All right. So
with the new broker now.
Let me go this best and final, all right? So you go to best and final, but you're not the highest, which typically, you know, I say to people a lot of times, you don't have to be the highest to get the deal, because a lot of times the person that says they're going to pay the highest just goes in to really try to retrade that deal. And then the seller gets upset and they end up wanting to go somewhere else. So you formed a relationship with a broker, which is great, because typically they're going to ask for the broker guidance as to who do you think we should go to next. But can you tell me about your particular situation and how that deal fell into your lap?
Yeah, I remember I received a very good suggestion from Mike Flaherty. And he said, call the guy at 5 p.m., just right after everybody else send their offers. Call him just at 5 p.m. and find out where do you have to be to get the deal. And that's exactly what I did. I called him at 5 p.m. and he said, are you going to send me an offer? Because we have been talking for 30 days, almost every day. And I was like, yes, I want to send you an offer, but I need to know where you are. Okay. And he said, well, I cannot tell you exactly, but if you are in these, you know, areas, you can get the deal, two of the deals, or maybe both of the deals. And then I sent him the offer. So he gave me an idea of where do I have to be. But then he came back 3 days later or 2 days later saying, okay, now you are in the top two. And, you know, these guys want, they want to offer $100,000 in her money, and they want both of the deal. And I said, listen, I'm not going to go into this game with you. Okay. Really? I'm not going to put her money. So if you have to give me one deal, just give me one deal. I'm not going to go for the two. Okay. Give me one. Okay. And I will close that one. Now you have two clients in base of one, and you don't have to risk both of the property with one person. Okay. You just go give me one and give the other guy the other one that he wants to put her money. And he said, okay. That, and that's what he did. He gave he gave me the brand, the one in that one, Salsa Village.
All right. So now you've got the deal. And the next part of the deal is doing the raise. So you had to raise $1.5 million. Where did that come from?
Oh, well, I have a lot of help from somebody called Jake. we raised the money together. Okay. Jake is also another student, okay, that came with me in the deal.
Part of the RE Mentor family?
Yes, of course. We only work with the RE Mentor family. That's the people that I work with. I really like the fact, I feel that everybody that I have met through the RE Mentor family has a lot of high values, okay? And for me, that's very important. Every person that Jeannie said, call this person, you guys maybe can work together. They have a high values, and I like that, so.
So Jake brought with him. Mm-hmm. Jake brought with him a bunch of investors that he had already cultivated. Was that it?
No, he was into flips and single family homes. Okay.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S. Okay, so he knew people, and he knew people that already wanted to invest. So it was hard for him. It's not that it was easy.
Yeah.
It was hard for both of us, but we did it together.
So what was the strategy? So he went after the people that he knew in the single family business that could be, potentially be private money partners. Who did you go after?
Friends.
Did
and
you
families.
Raise? Yes. Oh, you did the friends and family raise.
Yeah, I also did a part of the raise. I will say that he did maybe 60% of the raise. Okay, he went to friends and family mostly. Some people that invested with him in the single family homes, but it was mostly friends and family. And I also went to some friends. I remember, and I think this is important to say, I took my son to the dentist. Yeah. And I found my friend with her two daughters there at the dentist, and we started talking about what I was doing. And I said, well, I'm doing this, and I have this deal right now. I'm looking for investors. And she was like, why you haven't called me? Just like that. I have money. I want to invest. It was just like that. So sometimes you don't know.
You know, when we're talking about private money, I always talk about the fact that the easiest question to answer is, what do you do, or what have you been up to? You know, and then you just tell them, and people that are interested will actually close themselves. They'll start talking about their objections, and you handle their objections. They don't realize that they're raising their own objections, but that's what they're doing. And as long as those objections are handled properly, they'll keep going down this road of wanting to be a partner in your deal. And then they'll get to the point where she got to, is like, why don't you call me?
Yeah.
You know, so that's how it works.
I'm not saying the raising money is easy. I think it's one of the hardest things to do. Mm-hmm. But especially starting out because
first couple of deals.
Doing. But the fact that that experience showed me also that you don't know where the money is really. I just had an investor for $100,000 just because I found her at the dentist appointment with my son, and she's one of my friends. So. You don't know where the money is coming from. So that's why you need to reach people. You have to tell them what you're doing.
Yeah, you just lay it out there. When they ask you, what have you been up to? I've been investing in emerging markets. If they're interested, they'll just keep the conversation going. If they're not, they'll talk about something else. You know, majority of them might not be interested, but the ones that are, they really are.
Yes.
And, you just, you know, dazzle them with your education, your knowledge. All right, so when you were doing the due diligence on the property, were there any difficulties? Did something pop out unexpected? What happened during the due diligence period?
We found something on the plumbing when they checked the main line. Okay. that it was going to cost us like about $10,000. We found that many of the units had like a lot of pets. Okay. I'm talking about 2, 3, 4, 5 pets that they were not paying, okay, for those pets. We found that, I mean, we chopped the competition and we found that the apartments, you know, needed some rehab and they were totally not updated. Okay. So some spray on the countertops and the bathrooms, we will just do the trick and we will be able to raise the rents. And the important thing is that I was so conservative when I underwrote this deal. We didn't increase the rent in the projection for 18 months, okay? And the reason because I sent you this deal is because we closed this deal in December, and then in January, it was like a year and a half or 2 years ago. I don't know, but last year, okay, it was COVID, okay?
Yep.
So because we did underwrite this so conservative and we didn't increase the rent for the first almost 2 years, we were able to do very well last year because we had like, I think 10% vacancy rate. So the property was a little bit affected, okay, but we made the returns.
That's really good for a 70s product because typically those were the hardest hit by COVID.
Yes, that year built
because I can see pictures of it over here. So what price did you guys agree at? Was it the 4.1?
It was 4.15.
What did you originally go into contract for? Did you renegotiate after you went through the due diligence process?
Yes, we had to because we found things on the roof. Okay.
Yeah.
Then disclosed. We renegotiated for about, I don't remember, less than 100,000, but I think we went on a contract for 4.25, okay? But we found that on the line, that was something important. I don't remember how much it was to repair that. And we found something on the roof, okay?
So you got about 100,000 off. And did you take back a repair allowance?
Yes.
How much was the repair allowance?
Well, no, it was actually the same. The repair allowance was almost 100,000.
Oh, so... did you get the money back in a repair allowance or did you negotiate it off the price?
Right. Okay. I didn't understand the question. Yes, we got it off the price. Okay. As a repair allowance.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. All right. Good. All right. So now you take over the property. Now you get your inspection. You get to spend a day on the property. You look at everything. You see some issues. But on the takeover, when you started managing the property, first of all, how'd you find your management company?
Eric Stewart gave me that suggestion.
Okay, Eric Stewart's a banker who finances a lot of deals throughout the U.S., good resource. And then, so you take over the property. Were there any surprises after you took over the property?
Surprises? I don't know. Well, we had many.
What did you do with the people with all the dogs?
Well, it took us about a year to finally start charging for those pets.
Did you let them keep multiple pets?
No, they said that they were not their pets, okay?
And they weren't their pets? Did you be feeding them?
They were just visiting. We actually built a dog park at the property. So we were able to find aggressive dogs in the property that we have to tell them that they have to go, some aggressive breeds. So the property management, it took them like about a year to finally start charging for the pets that they were there.
Okay. And let's talk about some of the, now you bought it with a value add. Was it below market rents? I see all of the stuff that you did on the repairs for value add and the upgrades, but was there low occupancy or low rents in the value adds as well?
The occupancy was fine. It was like above 90, okay, 94, I believe, but they were charging for, they had the all bills paid in the property, and it was the only property in that city that had all bills paid. It was the only one. So we start charging for the utilities. That's why we didn't want to increase the rent for almost 2 years because we just didn't want to increase the rent plus charge for the utilities. Okay.
Right.
Plus charge for the pets. Okay. Plus we didn't know that we would have a pandemic. So the fact that we did it in a conservative way pay off.
Okay, so for your value add, I have down here that, or your interior upgrades, you did vinyl plank flooring, you resurfaced the countertops in the kitchens and the bathrooms, you put in new lighting packages, two-tone paint, you introduced a green program that targets water savings with low-flow toilets and shower heads, repaired leaky faucets, which is that will cut your expenses by about 30% a year if you do that every 6 months. And then you instituted the RUB system, resident utility billing system.
That fixing the leaking faucets was a win, because when we did the due diligence, we found we found units where the water was just like running. It was not leaking. Okay. It was totally running in the bathroom. It was crazy. So every time we found one, we were like, yay, we found like a goal. Yeah.
Absolutely. You're saving money. I just want to go on. So also on the exterior, the upgrades were the landscaping, the playground and the barbecue area. Out of the dog park, you upgraded the laundry rooms and you put up 40 covered parking spaces, which will add to your income as well. Yes?
We decided not to do jet.
Oh, you decided not to do that?
Parking. Okay. And the reason for that is because we found out that it was super, super, super expensive in Texas to get the covered parking. And we decided that the returns were just not there on the covered parking, okay, so far. Maybe we will do it now that after COVID, the companies maybe will take the price a little bit down. But at that point, it was crazy. They wanted, $10,000 for space.
Oh, wow.
It was like out of this world.
So how's that deal performing for you right now? What type of
pretty good
cash flows are you getting, and how much equity have you created?
Pretty good. The investors got paid their 7% return, okay, and they got paid more. Okay, I don't remember what we ended. I think it was 10%. I don't remember exactly. But the investors are super happy. They're so happy that they are coming with me in other properties, okay? They're coming with me in a property that I'm going to close this week. Okay. So they are happy. I think that if you do what you say that you have to, you're going to do, okay, your investors are happy and your tenants are happy. And that's how you build your business, with trust and working hard and doing what you say you have to do.
So you not only survived the pandemic, but you really set yourself up. So when everything really opens up in the fall, you'll be able to start raising those rents and creating a lot of value in the property because of the increased cash flow. So you set yourself up for a really good win.
Yes. Yes. We're very happy that we survived the pandemic so far.
Awesome.
Successfully.
All right. So we are going to go into what's called lightning round. All right. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and they're kind of odd questions. Okay. This is meant to be fun. And then you respond to the first thing that comes to your mind. And then I'll let you tell the story that you were going to tell about your twins.
Okay.
Is it something you want? All right.
Yes.
So, first question. Are rats cute?
What?
Are rats cute? Rats. They like mice?
Rats?
Are they cute?
Oh, no. No.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Flying.
Flying? What's your favorite car?
Ferrari.
Do you know how to salsa dance?
Oh, yes, I do. Sure.
And do you eat salsa with chips?
Yes.
And do you eat salsa with chips and salsa dance at the same time?
Yes.
Okay. From a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at live presentations?
9.
How good were you when you first started?
5.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
No.
How many cups of coffee do you drink in a day?
2 or 3.
Your ideal outside temperature?
74 degrees.
Have you ever slapped somebody in the face?
Yes.
Final question. Why did kamikaze pilots wear helmets?
Can you repeat that again?
Why did kamikaze pilots wear helmets?
I have no idea.
Okay, that's our lightning round. So did you have a story that you want to talk about your twins? Tell about your twins early on.
Well, it was actually about my last three kids, because when I was trying to find out what I wanted to do, okay, with my professional life, I was actually struggling of getting pregnant with another child. Okay. My husband and I wanted to have many kids. Okay. But after our second child, I just couldn't do it anymore. And the doctor said that I was not going to able to be able to have more kids. And then when I went into this journey, I feel that I was so happy to be doing something that I like. Okay. And then I started getting pregnant out of the sudden. And Jeannie was telling me, Vanessa, you're doing this business. How are you going to do it with a baby? And I just didn't do it with one. I did it with three so far. Okay. Which it hasn't been that easy. Okay. But I just do it. And I just want to encourage people that moms and everybody that is in RE Mentor that have kids, just to work hard. Just the fact that you have family and kids, it doesn't mean that you don't have to create a business for yourself. Okay. And we have to find time for the family too. But this has been really a ride for me.
You know, what you're describing is a challenge. And, you know, if you walk around this 12,000 square foot building, you'll see pictures of people like you going out there and they're doing deals. Maybe most of them are their first deals and some of them after they've created a big portfolio, but every one of them comes from different backgrounds. You know, they come from different parts of life and they have their own unique set of challenges. I mean, everybody has some sort of a challenge. Yours were your children. Some people were working two and three jobs. Some people just have past histories that were difficult. And the whole idea behind mindset, your own mindset, is overcoming those challenges and just deciding that you're going to do it. And when you make that decision that you're going to do it, nothing's going to stop you. You become unstoppable, which is actually the title of a really great book, Unstoppable, that I read early on that helped me to become unstoppable. And I actually had the author of that book come to Ultimate Partnering, I think it was 7, and be a keynote speaker. So that was profound for me when that happened. So if you like this episode, you can press the like button down below, subscribe to us so you don't miss an episode, and hit that bell and you'll be notified when there is another episode. So this has been Multifamily Deal Lab.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.